Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
2 weeks ago, I was having a panic attack 40 meters underground. My hometown in Jackson County, Alabama, is notorious for its cave systems, which attracts all manner of visitors who would otherwise never set foot in our little corner of the South. I come from a real outdoorsy family, and caving has been a favorite pastime of mine since I was a kid. I'm a decent caver, not quite as good as my sister, Allison, but still good enough to traverse more advanced routes. That said, there's still plenty of paths that terrify me, and the bowl was quickly becoming one of them. The bowl is a narrow, sloping passageway that branches off from one of the wider, more popular routes. It's short and parabolic, meaning that the passageway declines sharply for a while, then levels out for a few feet, and then there's a steep incline. The bowl gets smaller as you reach the bottom, then opens up as you make your way back up to the top. It's not the tightest tunnel in the cave system, but it's still low-hung enough that it needs to be traversed head-first with an army crawl. The lack of space at the bottom and the sharp decline always concerned me, but when Allison returned home from college for the summer, she insisted that I give it a try. After warming up with some of the easier routes, we headed for the bowl. At that point, I had never successfully completed the route, so Allison gave me her version of a pep talk as we headed down to the entrance. "I know the slope freaks you out," she said, "but what should freak you out is that angle at the bottom. You really have to bend down into the incline. Almost like you're doing a bridge upside down. You know, people call it the spine snapper," I interjected. "Yeah, I know." Really, it wasn't a matter of skill, but of getting over a psychological hurdle. The closer we got to the passageway's entrance, the more every muscle in my body screamed at me to turn back. By the time I braced my hands on the bowl's entrance, I was short of breath. My heart thundered in my chest. My fingers felt numb. I couldn't do it. I remember opening my mouth to tell my sister I wasn't ready when I heard the sound of fabric scraping rock. I looked back at my sister, but she wasn't moving. Confusion abating my anxiety, I held my breath and listened. There was labored breathing from below me. Someone was climbing up the bowl, and they were doing so without turning their lights on, which was not only odd, but also incredibly dangerous. There's no space to turn around in the bowl. If I had been going down while another person was climbing up, we both would have gotten stuck. I shuddered at the thought as I backed up and waited. After a minute, a man crawled out to the bowl and into view of our headlights. The climber was middle-aged, Caucasian, brunette, and tall but slender. He looked like a pretty average guy, but as he pulled himself out of the passageway and spotted my sister and I, he gave us a look that was just a little off. For some reason, he seemed incredibly nervous, like we'd caught him in a terrible act.
"Good day, ladies,"
he said, his voice brittle and breathy. We said hello to the man, and afterwards, to my dismay, he started moving in our direction.
"You two headed down that way?"
He jerked his head back towards the bowl.
"Actually, we're headed back up."
Although I had previously only had positive experiences with other cavers, something about this guy was giving me the creeps.
"That's a shame. Never done old spine snapper before. She's a real beaut of a route. I could show you 2 hours done if you like."
"That's nice of you, but we have to regroup with our party."
After a few more attempts at convincing us to go with him, the man seemed to let it go. He bade us farewell in his jittery fashion, and then hesitantly shuffled past us to begin his ascent, still without turning on any lights. I wondered how long he'd been down in the caves. Allison and I waited a few minutes, then decided to head for the surface ourselves. I was a little nervous to encounter the man again, but I didn't see any other option. We trudged towards the entrance in silence, wary of every blind corner. I haven't mentioned this part to anyone yet, but as we ascended, I found myself growing increasingly anxious. At first I thought it was because of the stranger, but as we got closer to the surface, I recognized the feeling not as fear,
but regret. I felt, for no reason at all, like I was leaving something behind. Even after double-checking that I had all of my belongings, I felt very strongly that I had left something near the bowl. Allison and I made our way out of the caves without incident. I could barely believe it. I was so sure that the guy was going to try something, yet we didn't see him again in the caves after we parted ways. We made our way to Allison's car, which was the only remaining one in the parking lot, and drove home. The next week was fairly normal. I spent most of it at the pool with my friends, trying my best to combat the brutal heat. A few days after my failed caving effort, I passed by the living room window and saw a car parked outside our house. It was a real beat-up 90s Toyota Camry, a rare model to spot in our neighborhood. Our front lawn is long and poorly lit, so I squinted out into the night, trying to make out if there was anyone in the driver's seat. After a minute, the car turned on and drove off. I didn't get a good look at the driver. Although I'd never seen it before in all my life, I saw that same car again the next day. Once again, it was in the evening, but this time, instead of seeing the car parked, I saw it slowly passing by my house. I'm certain it was the same car, and seeing it slow down and then speed up right in front of my home concerned me. I brought it up with my parents, but they shrugged it off. I wonder, based on what happens next, how this whole affair might have turned out differently had they listened. It was a week after my attempt at the bowl, and I had fallen asleep downstairs in front of the TV. My mom was out of town for work, and to my knowledge, my dad and sister were asleep in their bedrooms upstairs. When I woke in the middle of the night, it was pitch black in my house. The TV had turned off automatically, and Allison had neglected to leave the stairwell light on for me. I fished my phone out from where it had fallen between the couch cushions and checked the time. Just past 3 a.m. I sighed and sat up, turning my phone flashlight on and making my way towards the stairs. When I entered the dining room, something gave me pause. I had heard an odd sound akin to a light shuffling, and it transported me right back to the caves. I thought of crouching at the top of the bowl, waiting in the dark for an unseen presence to close in on me. I raised my phone, scanning the room. The light trailed over the counter, the fridge, the pantry. When I made it to the window at the far end of the room, I saw a pair of men's boots peeking out from beneath the long curtains. Strange. It was unlike my dad to bring his boots inside the house. I stood there, staring. Had I ever seen my dad wearing that particular pair of shoes? A gentle summer breeze blew into the kitchen, making the curtains billow ever so slightly. It was only then, once the curtains were pushed back enough to see the top of the boots, did I realize that they were attached to a pair of legs. Unfortunately, I couldn't suppress my reaction in time. I audibly gasped, and as soon as I made a sound, a man holding a crowbar ripped back the curtain and charged straight for me. I screamed like I never have before in my life. Acting on pure instinct, I chucked my phone right at his head. It hit its mark and stopped him in his tracks for a few seconds, but I had lost my light source. In the darkness, I could only hear the thud of his boots as he recovered and resumed his pursuit. I scrambled blindly towards the stairs, screaming for my family as I ran. I got to the living room with the intruder hot on my heels. The crowbar whistled as he drove it through the air, and I lunged out of the way, the steel missing my head by inches. The force of his swing knocked over a chair, sending it clattering to the ground. When I finally reached the base of the stairs, I ascended the steps 3 at a time. Once I reached the top, I nearly barreled into my dad, who immediately grabbed me and pushed me away from the stairs, out of harm's way. The intruder lunged up the last few steps, but my dad was ready. I didn't see what exactly happened next, whether it was a shove or a kick that knocked him back. But the next thing I heard was a shout.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Of surprise, a series of thuds echoed through the house as the intruder tumbled, followed by a loud, sickening crack. And then, there was silence. The man had landed on his neck. By the time the paramedics came to remove his crumpled body from the bottom of our stairs, he was already dead. Despite my dad's protests, before they took the corpse away, I went downstairs to look at the man who had tried to kill me, and was shocked to see a familiar face. I hadn't recognized him when I was busy running for my life, but once I took a closer look, I realized that it was the same man I had encountered in the caves. The investigation that followed was a blur to me. Police found a tracking device stuck to Allison's car, which I assumed the man planted after running into us near the bowl. Why he did so, and why he wanted to hurt us, I couldn't even fathom. I spent days in my room, wallowing in fear and guilt for inadvertently leading the man to my family. Thankfully, my dad didn't face any legal repercussions, given that he was protecting himself and his family, but the psychological effects of what he had done weighed on him. My dad is a great man, and although I don't think he regrets what he did, I'm sure killing a person weighs heavily on one's consciousness, regardless of the circumstances. All throughout last week, as I was holed up in my room feeling like shit, I kept thinking about the bull. I had no clue why. I mean, I'd just almost been killed by a madman with a crowbar. You'd think that would take precedence. And yet, I couldn't stop thinking about it. When I laid in my bed at night, when I closed my eyes and listened, it was as though I could hear the cave itself speaking to me. And it always said the same thing. Come back. Yesterday morning, I asked Allison to return to the caves with me. She was understandably surprised that I wanted to return, especially after experiencing something so traumatizing just a week prior. It took some convincing, but ultimately, she relented. My parents, who were extremely on edge after the break-in, made sure that we took all necessary precautions. We double-checked our equipment, triple-checked the route, and made sure our parents knew exactly where we were going and how long we'd be gone. It was 8 a.m. when we parked at the edge of the long, dirt road leading to the caves. Though I was more than ready to go, my sister seemed apprehensive. I pointed this out to her as we walked towards the opening, and she shrugged.
"I just have a weird feeling about this," she said. "I don't know. It's hard to explain." "Well, we don't have to worry about that guy from last time, at least," I said.
She gave me an unimpressed look, my morbid joke going unappreciated. Feeling guilty after dragging her along with me, I offered that she stay inside, but she refused to let me go alone. And so, we descended together. The air was cold and thick within the cave, as though darkness itself had weight. My headlamp cut through it in a narrow beam, but it did little to chase away the unsettling feeling that had taken root in me. The gnawing in my gut, the urge to press forward, only intensified as we pushed deeper. Allison and I moved in practiced rhythm, alternating the lead as the passage twisted. Sometimes we could stand, our feet finding purchase on the uneven ground. Other times we had to crawl, the rock scraping against our bodies as we wormed our way forward. At one point, Allison's hand squeezed mine, a reassuring gesture which was entirely uncharacteristic for my big sister. She must have been even more uneasy than I realized. When we finally reached the bowl, I hesitated. The air here was different, heavier, carrying with it the scent of earth and something else, something sweet and damp,
like rot. I turned to my sister, her face barely visible in the dim light, and I saw in her face a flicker of the same urgency that was driving me.
I'll go first,
I said, and my sister shook her head.
Climbing up is harder than climbing down. I'll go first and talk you through the vertex. What if I get stuck down there and block you from going to get help?
She gave me a small smile.
If we're not home at 10:30 exactly, Mom will send the entire search and rescue department right to us. Besides, you won't get stuck. I'll make sure of that.
After that, she took a deep breath, shook out her arms, and then began her downward climb headfirst. I took a seat and got comfortable, waiting for her signal. Time slipped by in strange increments. I kept expecting to hear her voice. A quick, I'm through, or it's clear, but the silence stretched on, growing heavier with each passing second. Once 10 minutes had passed, I peered down into the bowl, failing to find my sister's light.
Allison?
I called, my voice echoing slightly in the confined space. No response. The silence was deafening. There was nothing. No shuffling, no breathing, nothing to suggest she was still down there. Fuck, I thought. I didn't know what to do. Stay put. Go for help. The last thing I should have done was charge in after her. But the urge, the same one that had been eating at me since we began, surged up again, screaming at me to follow her. My hands shook as I inched forward. Just another climb, I told myself. Just another climb. The rock was cold and unforgiving, pressing against my chest and shoulders as I inched forward. The angle was steep, but there was no risk of slipping forward and tumbling down. The passage was much too tight for that, and it only got tighter as I crawled. I breathed in shallow gasps as the path narrowed. I was 5 feet in, then 10, then 20, and it was far too late to turn around. All I could do was keep moving forward, keep going down. At last, I reached the bottom. The vertex was even sharper, more unforgiving than I expected. My headlamp flickered slightly as I began to maneuver, contorting my spine like I was doing an upside-down bridge. Just as I found the right angle, my light went out. Panic shot through me. My hands scrambled against the rock, trying to find purchase, but the walls at the pit of old Spine Snapper were smooth. Remembering all my training, I took a few grounding breaths. The worst thing I could do was start freaking out. I just had to keep pushing. And then, I felt it. A gust of wind, warm and unexpected, brushing against my face. My first thought was that it must be an air current, but then I realized it wasn't wind at all. It was breathing. Slowly, deliberately, and impossibly close. My blood ran cold as the realization hit me. Someone was there with me, right in front of my face. I froze, every muscle locking in place.
Allison?
There was no response, just the sound of deep, rhythmic breathing, as someone climbs down from the other side. Then, something happens that shocked me to my core, something that I still shudder to think about. Whoever was in front of me started to move backwards. Although they were facing me, if the breath on my face was any indication, they began to crawl up the incline. My jaw dropped. The noise of their movements was muffled, a soft, shuffling sound that sent chills down my spine. It wasn't Allison. It couldn't be. No one could move like that. Not in that space. Not in that impossible position. For a long moment, I couldn't move. My heart was pounding in my ears, and my mind was spinning, trying to process what had just happened. The darkness was suffocating, but the pain was beginning to ebb, replaced by an eerie calm. I knew I had to keep moving. Had to get out of that bent position before I lost my nerve.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Entirely. I carefully maneuvered around the vertex, bending my back in that unnatural arc, pushing down the lingering terror that someone or something was still there, just beyond my reach. The climb up the incline was slow, each movement deliberate as I fought against the instinct to panic. I pulled myself up inch by inch, the memory of that impossible encounter gnawing at the edge of my mind. But the hunger was still there, that insatiable need driving me forward. And so I climbed, leaving the spine snapper behind and hoping that whatever I had felt down there wasn't still right in front of me. When I finally pulled myself onto level ground, the relief was so overwhelming that I crumpled into a heap on the cold cave floor. For a few minutes, I couldn't do anything but lie there and breathe, trying to collect myself. The darkness was still absolute, wrapping around me like a shroud, but the pressure of the spine snapper was gone, and that was enough to keep the panic at bay. I forced myself to stand. I still had to find Allison. The cavern had widened enough for me to rise fully, and so I straightened and pressed my right hand against the wall of the cave for support. Before every step I took, I tapped the floor in front of me with my foot, making sure there were no sudden drop-offs. My senses were on high alert, every nerve straining. After walking for a while, my headlamp temporarily flicked to life, a brief flash of light illuminating the cave. For a split second, I saw her, Allison, about 10 feet ahead of me. Relief flooded through me, and I called out to her, my voice cracking with a mixture of fear and hope. She didn't answer. The light died just as quickly as it had come. I stood still, listening, but there was nothing. No sound of movement, no reply. I swallowed hard, my throat dry, and continued inching through the cave at an agonizingly slow pace. The light flickered again, and this time I saw Allison. Or at least, I thought it was Allison, turning into a small cavern off the main passageway. A sliver of doubt pierced through the relief. Was that really her? Something about the way she moved seemed strange. I hesitated, the memory of that impossible figure in the spine snapper fresh in my mind. But I couldn't ignore the pull. I had to find out. I had to find her. I started moving again, my steps slow and cautious. Eventually, the cave wall curved under my right hand, and I followed it into the cavern I'd seen Allison disappear into. I could hear breathing again, and I came to a stop, my fear giving way to frustration.
"Dude, stop trying to scare me,"
I snapped, my voice echoing off the walls of the cavern. Again, the only response was more breathing, just ahead of me. My skin prickled with unease. Then, to my confusion, my sister's voice filled the caves. But it wasn't coming from in front of me, but behind me. Her voice was clear, unmistakable, and it was coming from the main passageway. I turned around.
"Allison?"
I called out, my pulse loud in my ears.
"Allison, I'm in here."
A bright light flickered at the mouth of the cave, and then my sister appeared, her face pale with worry.
"What happened?"
she asked.
"Where did you go? Where did I go? Where did you go? You never gave me the signal." "I..."
she started to respond, but her voice trailed off. She was no longer looking at me, but past me. and something in her expression made my blood run cold. I turned slowly, following her gaze. Crumpled against the far wall of the small cavern, illuminated by the beam of Allison's headlamp, was the body of a woman. At first, I didn't even realize it was a person. Her arms and legs had been broken in several places, and they splayed out limply around her, more akin to the limbs of a spider than a human being. Half of her face was missing. Teeth were scattered on the floor around her. Her internal organs spilled out over her lap from a massive gash in her abdomen. Rot had set into her flesh, and maggots had made a home of her body. It was difficult to tell what wounds were made posthumously by the bugs, and which had been laid upon her by whatever monster took her life. When I saw her, the hunger dissipated in an instant, replaced by a feeling of complete and utter emptiness. I knew, without a doubt, that this was what I had been searching for, the reason for the unrelenting pull. But now that I found her, there was nothing left. No fear, no need, just a cold, stark understanding. Allison reached out to me, her hand trembling as she gripped my arm. "We need to go," she whispered, and I nodded. I backed out of the cave, feeling somehow that it would be disrespectful to turn my back on her once again. We returned to the bowl, and leaving was far easier than coming had been. When we left the cave and stepped out into the daylight, I felt like I was returning from another world. We drove to the police station to report what we had seen, and a team is sent to traverse the bowl tomorrow to retrieve the body. I've found it hard to do much of anything since we returned. To eat, to speak, to sleep. I see her when I close my eyes. I hear her breathing when all else is quiet. But now, the sensation doesn't fill me with fear. If anything, the lingering traces feel like a thank you, like gratitude for ensuring that, even if only for a minute, she would feel the daylight on her skin once more.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.